This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Tech Thursday. I'm Frida Liu, and I've got the folks from Digital News Asia here with me, Chong Jin Seung, Kiranjit Kaur, and Karamjit Singh. We're here to talk about the tech-related stories. We're going to start off with Jin.
Yeah.
Okay, this is WeWork to open its largest Southeast Asia space in KL come 2019.
Yeah, so they made an official announcement yesterday. It's at a swanky KL location, I would say, but it's relatively close to where they're going to open up. So actually, incidentally, I bumped into WeWork sometime in the middle of the year because I was at a conference in Singapore. I had no idea who they were. Mm. I didn't know they were such a big deal, actually, because they did raise about, in total, $12.1 billion in total.
They're from China, right?
No. They're New York-based.
New York.
Mm. So, yeah, I mean, they come from New York. They have got lots of co-working spaces all around the region. So, to be honest, actually, a lot of co-working spaces here have taken inspiration from them, the concept of it. They started in 2010, and I think co-working around here just got off maybe 2-3 years ago.
Mm.
So clearly, these guys have been doing this for a really long time.
Mm.
So yeah, they're bringing their brand of co-working space into Malaysia come 2019, and they've partnered with a local partner. Actually, they call it a proprietary leasing partnership, if I remember correctly.
Mm.
So they're doing a rev share model together with a local partner by the name of Daman Land, which is run by a gentleman named Douglas Cheng. So they're going to be opening up in Equatorial Plaza. I'm not sure.
Correct.
I think that was the old Equatorial
Hotel.
Torn down. Now they're bringing a new building up there, and they're going to occupy 5 floors.
Wow.
Now they won't tell me how much space exactly. I think Karam, you have an estimation.
It's about 100,000 square feet now.
So they didn't confirm that, but they say there are 1,900 desks. So like there's space enough for 1,900 individuals in there. But yeah, I mean, so 5 floors, they're going to say that, I mean, that combined space is going to make it like the biggest in Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
And they've already opened up in Singapore, in Jakarta, Manila, Ho Chi Minh, I think it's quite recent as well. So KL, we're on the tail end, but apparently they have set their sights on KL for quite some time.
Okay, I was just at Dojo KL yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Which is another co-working space. Apparently, I was just informed yesterday, 2030 of these co-working spaces, different brand names, and we're not talking up here at BFM, we have
Common Ground.
They've got about 10, 11, right?
Mm.
So that's just one brand, right?
Yeah.
And with all these things. And whether there is a demand for it, I think that's how people are going to be working in the future.
Foreseeable future.
But to open the largest Southeast Asia space in KL and not Indonesia, right? It just surprises me.
Oh, no. But actually, in the article I wrote an article the same day in the morning before the event, and I was speaking to Pravin Singhi from Zarin Property. They did some research and they said that, the way companies want to work has changed, and co-working spaces have recognized that trend and they're addressing it. And, he says the market in Malaysia, by the way, I think he did estimate there's about 24 players right now. And he said the market is going to grow about 17% a year over the next 5 years. So, and right now they take up about less than 5% of the commercial office space in the Klang Valley. And he thinks it's going to go up to 25%.
Okay.
Right, within by 2022 or something. So these are strong growth numbers for a market that's flat or even downish, right?
I see the logic because, people don't want to have this 3-year lease and then we're stuck here. We're going to buy this furniture. We're going to do this. Now maybe I just get together for a project.
Yeah.
There's 3 months. It doesn't become a fixed cost, it becomes a variable cost.
Real example, just quickly, I know someone who's thinking of moving to a smaller office location. He's got a very nice office, but he said he's reluctant to leave the office because he spent a lot on fittings. Can you imagine? He's got an attachment to the amount of money spent on the fittings. So he's incurring a high rent every month when he should be reducing his rent by half. So quite amazing. And this is a traditional way of renting an office. So the shared workspaces totally take away that, right? And give you fluidity. And that's why Previn mentioned too. He said companies want to work in a more fluid manner. So interesting.
Okay, very interesting story there. I'm going to move on to Kieran's story. This is the ECF report card. What's that about?
So this was at the SCX FinTech Conference.
Last week.
With Supercharger. And Elaine Lokman, the co-founder and director of Ataplus, she gave an overview of how the ECF scene in Malaysia has been doing.
For this year though, very specific, right?
From 2016 to 2018.
She gave a three-year report card.
Equity crowdfunding.
So how the... Because it was launched in 2015, that's when SC released the framework and sixth license...
Still the same six, huh?
No, now seven. Yeah, so it has become seven now.
What's the latest edition?
I'm not too sure, actually.
Okay.
I should find out.
I thought it's BFM Media, man.
That's why we have you. Because you went to the event. I didn't.
No, but they didn't mention who the seventh one was. They didn't even highlight the breakdown of how each ECF platform was performing. They just gave an overview. She just gave an overview. So... In the beginning, she said, when she started off, she said, this year, everyone's focus was on politics and we had the change of government and all that. So they did experience like a three-month low. But despite that, she thinks they performed quite well. Their target for this year was actually to reach the 34 million mark, but they only reached 21.6 million.
In terms of money raised,
Raised, correct. But however, the fund size raised has been progressively growing since they started off. So in 2016, the largest fund issue was 2.6 million ringgit.
Okay.
And today it has reached 3 million, which is the maximum that you can raise on the platform at any one time. But the maximum you can raise is actually 5 million, but say you reach the 3 million target in the first round, you have to have a second round of funding to raise the remaining 2 million. And the smallest fund size was 175,000 ringgit, 175,000 in 2016. And today has reached 300,000. So that's a 71% growth since then. And she did highlight this. There have been 19 fundraising campaigns published in 2018. So that might seem like a small number, but they've actually received 210 applications throughout. So she's saying this is an indication of how robust their screening process is. They're very diligent and they comply with all SC's regulations in terms of in terms of documentation and even transparency to those people that want to invest.
All this translates to investor protection, right? SC just doing its job there.
You know, so they were very bullish with, what, 34 million, but they know they got 21 million. Why do you think they were so bullish and then it didn't achieve that? I mean, it's still great results, but they were obviously very bullish, but didn't meet it. Where do you think they went wrong?
I think it was because of the three-month low that she was saying, because she said everybody was distracted. A lot of them
after
noticed.
May, is it?
So there was like Hari Raya,
Actually, longer than that. And even 2 months before May, everybody was just so focused on election.
So
right?
she said
really, so it's really
a few campaigns during that period, they didn't actually catch the attention that it, it should have. So I think those people had to extend their funding round and then it received the response. And one more thing that she said was, ECF is a very good way of democratizing investments because of the minimum, the smallest investment size is that you that has been issued so far is RM10. And this was just by a company just trying out, like, you know, can we actually issue an RM10 thing on the platform? And they did, and somebody actually just... Sorry, the company wanted to issue this and one of the investors were like, okay, let's just buy the RM10. Let's just buy into this RM10 thing. And he tried it out and it worked. So she said this is a very good way of democratizing investments because it shows that everybody can actually do it. You don't have to be like a someone that's don't have to be a high net individual to basically invest.
Okay.
That's your democratization.
Yep, and one interesting fact is the age breakdown shows that the younger generation, Y and X, are more involved. So 56% Gen Y, 33% are Gen X involved in ECF campaigns. So she said although they want more response from the baby boomer generation, she does admit that the investment sizes among the older group is much larger, I guess, because of the capacity of earning and stuff.
Yeah. But then it's a whole new concept for them, I guess, you know, to do that. So anyway, you got the current pool of people who are excited, interested in it. It's great. Yeah. We'll have more stories after this. I'm here with Chong Jin Seung, Kiranjit Kaur, and Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia. Stay tuned to Enterprise. BFM 89.9.
Bluff-free medium, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise. Good morning, Frida Liu here. I'm with the folks from Digital News Asia, Chong Jin Seung, Kiranjit Kaur, and Karamjit Singh. Of course, you know, we've covered a couple of interesting stories earlier on. This one is GBS Players Brand International and Nityo Infotech. They're going to execute an M&A to accelerate capabilities. Of course, this is run by Munira Lui. And also she's a finalist for the EY Woman Entrepreneur of the Year. And we'll find out the results tonight.
The grand dinner gala.
But why is this a significant move? This is quite major, actually.
Yeah. Oh, no. Well, you've got a Malaysian. When GBS, first of all, is Global Business Services. So, it is the umbrella term that you use. People used to use outsourcing, right? Yep. Or shared services. So the word to use now is Global Business Services. And she's been one of the pioneers in the space in Malaysia for a long time. I think she started a company in 2004. Mm. And today now she's grown it to about 750 people. It doesn't sound like a lot. You know, they focus on services and customer experience consulting, yeah? But she's been wanting to grow the footprint to Singapore, Australia, New Zealand, you know, and a whole bunch of countries, and looking for a workforce of 3,000 by the end of next year and 5,000 by 2020. So it's audacious considering 15 years, you know, 750. And then what do you do? You've got Navin Kumar in the US who's running a similar company, but with they're doing technology consulting also. And he's already got a company headcount of like maybe 4,000 to 8,000 people. And he's got huge plans to grow too. He wants to be like a multinational, right, by X number of years. So he's got his Nityo 2.0 vision. He wants to grow to 100,000 employees, right? Be a global 500 company within the next 5 years. Crazy, right? The only way you can do this is by having mergers and acquisitions. So they came together, actually. And what's interesting is that Brandt International, which is B-R-A-N-D-T, with a T there, Munira has given up 49% stake in the company. So she's still a majority owner, which is fantastic for Malaysia. You want to achieve a win-win, right? Mm. So now she'll act as the Southeast Asian base for Nityo, you know, to expand into this region and even to the Australias and all. And, you know, you increase your capabilities too. But what I like about this deal right away, they said that now they're looking to make KL their hub for this region. And they're hoping to hire 10,000 specialists by end of 2020. Yeah, because they're gonna be adding capabilities like digital, you know, outsourcing, and you've got technology outsourcing there, knowledge process outsourcing, whole bunch of things they're gonna add because these are the skill sets that Nityo has. He's gonna share technology transfer with Munira's company, and they've already opened their own new office. Mm. So when you say they're gonna do the deal, actually, it was signed in June of this year. And the office opened up just last week, I think last week Friday. So in the article, there's a nice picture of the office opening and with a couple of people there, including Chia from Outsourcing Malaysia. So significant for Malaysia because you've got a company now who's accelerated now how they can play the game. And she's you know, elevated Malaysia also. And I like what Nitya said also, Navin said. Mm. He feels that Malaysia is now ready, you know, and there are a lot of opportunities in the country for further merger and acquisition to create a win-win situation. Mm. So whatever they've been doing has been going on well so far. But at the end of my article, I think I asked Munira, very important, you know, look forward, right? You know, she says the government agencies are clued in about what to do here, but they're not really moving as aggressively as they need to. Because I've been covering this space for a long time, Frida, and it was sad to hear that we need to improve on the skills of our workforce, which was a weak point recognized a long time ago, because we want to move up the value chain, right? From just taking contact call, you know, work, want to move up the value chain, people are aware, but the skill set is still gapping. English language competency, she mentioned, is still there. Mm. And she mentioned a quick and effective measure to equip the workforce. Coming up with quick and effective measures to equip the workforce is key. And she actually mentioned the HRDF fund. It says it needs to be utilized to support the relevant skills enhancement and such. And she urges for the proper governance and policy to be designed and executed to ensure the optimization of the fund. You know, because there was a change in CEO of the fund, and there was hoo-ha about money not being used properly and all. So there's a new CEO in there, somebody from Khazanah seconded there. So I think she's kind of gently hinting that they need to get everything in place so that right. the money the employees have already there, you know, they can use for activities like this. So kind
she's,
of interesting.
She's mentioned before that that she has plans to list in 2019.
You cannot list now because you've got this merger and acquisition. So
you can't do that.
You want to realize the value of that first, and maybe, you know, it could come later. Now she's got a lot on her plate, right, Sally? The capabilities, the skill sets her team will have has been expanded dramatically. She can compete for a lot more work that maybe she couldn't before. So it's win-win. All this is one of those deals where it's really a plus, 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 right? All three sides. So good exciting stuff. For her. And I think there are more things that can be done. So I'll be doing a follow-up story on the overall outsourcing GBS industry in Malaysia. What is lacking from the side of maybe MDEC and Outsourcing Malaysia to InvestKL even to push it further up? Because I feel that strong push has lost its momentum. And that's not acceptable.
All right. Okay. It's a great opportunity for all of us.
Yeah.
Jin, you've got this story on Tapway. Tapway.
Tapway. Yes.
Right. What's Tapway?
So there are
not the beer tap.
No. Nothing alcohol related. But there are a Malaysian startup that has specialized in IoT technology. In particular, they do a lot of camera tracking. More accounting. Sorry, I'm trying to find the right terminology for
camera tracking.
Facial recognition.
Recognition. Yeah.
That's their latest, actually. So, just jumping ahead, they have a new solution called Face Track. It does exactly what it says. Wow. It does track faces, but they're making it affordable for irregular brick and mortar retailers who normally would like. When they want to estimate how many people come into, let's say, a mall or how many people come to your shop, you may do it manually or you do like a very inaccurate ways. But this, by using cameras, you can really tell down to how long they spend in what area, of your shop, what area of the mall, how many come through this entrance or that entrance. And if you go through, one of their clients is Pavilion. Mm. So if you walk through Pavilion nowadays, I certainly pay attention a bit. There are some cameras around. Mm. So these cameras actually do detect like how many people they can go down to gender, age, and such.
Yeah, so any issues with privacy or not?
So funny you should ask that. I did ask them that. Mm. So privacy is a concern of devs. But I think what they do actually is that they encrypt the data of what the faces are. And without actually like a name to go along with it, you're just another face in the sea of crowd, actually. Yeah. So it's not much.
I don't want to be seen, you know, after people know that I've been going to the MS back, getting a Birkin back. I don't want people to know that.
Quite conscious. They're quite conscious. But I mean, it's interesting because they have innovation in this space. I mean, they're tapping on AI technology as well. Pretty much the same stuff that you see in your smart cities. You can tell, like, you know, who's jaywalking or not. Obviously, this is not what their solution is made for. But you can do things like, say, Frida, you do go to a particular bag shop, you're a VIP customer per se. So like if your face is recognized in their database, you come in, people will know, oh, you are a VIP or such. Conversely, you could also have a blacklist instead of a whitelist. And you can say, oh, this guy's a shoplifter and stuff like that. Also, you better escort this guy out
never
or pay attention.
Bills.
Okay. Or just like doesn't it has greasy paws, touching all the leather bags.
Or he doesn't have enough money and he's not gonna buy your handbags.
Yeah.
True.
She
or
he. Because handbags, what?
But anyway, if you go to Bata, Carl's Jr. or Kyo Chon, I think it's a Korean fried chicken place.
Right.
These places are already starting to use their solutions.
Excellent.
And they are going to have more pilot tests in the coming months. So it will be an interesting time to see, you know, how this solution will
great.
Take off.
It's great that more startups, you know, Frida, are trying to bring the price points down so that smaller companies can start engaging with this, because, you know, we talk about investing in companies being democratized now. You're right, with digital and with the lower cost of technology, we should be arriving at price points that SMEs can use too.
True.
Absolutely critical.
Okay, then we're moving on to a Frost and Sullivan report.
Yes, okay, so this report was done by Frost and Sullivan and it was presented at TM1's Leap Summit 2018. And the speaker was Ajay Sundar, the ICT Vice President of Frost & Sullivan. So Frost & Sullivan conducted this research on... So the talk was entitled How They Did It and Lessons Learned from Others' Digital Transformation Journey. 600 interviews with chief information officers.
Wow.
And they were trying to basically give the audience insight into how they can digitally transform based on their learnings. So interesting figure, 60% of enterprises are not confident of their digital transformation results. Wow. So basically, these companies are just embarking on digital transformation journeys. They're following the bandwagon and they're just doing it because they feel like, I need to do it, but I don't exactly know what to do. So they don't really have well-defined objectives of what they are trying to achieve by going digital, which is why the digital journey doesn't turn out well for them at the end of the day.
Not well-defined objectives. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not, their KPIs are not clearly defined. So he says, if you're embarking on a digital transformation journey for the sake of just ticking it off your checklist and there's no KPI, you're bound to fail. And he suggests that businesses should identify and map their innovations to their objectives. But often the hindrance is a limited budget. It often gets in the way for their innovation processes. But there's a reported increase of 15% in budgets to date.
So it's moving forward.
Yeah, it is increasing. Yeah. So I guess the C-suite is becoming more aware of the need to change and the need to increase their budgets as well. And he says it's very important to prioritize and focus on the top 5 or 10 areas that match your goals. So some of the challenges, he said, that of CIOs face is basically going up to their board and convincing them that we need to make this particular change because they can't actually show financial results or a previous track record to show that, you know what, you're going to get this benefit out of this, this financial result out of it.
True.
So that's something that the challenge they face, how to measure the ROI and how to convince their CIOs of the cost optimization.
Even the board, but that's interesting because Accenture did some research 2 years ago in 2017. In 2017. And they found that and they were using just publicly available data points, right? And they actually found that boards in Malaysia, especially of the larger companies, are actually very clued in to the potential opportunity and threats of digital. So, and in some countries, companies, the boards are the one. I know in telecom, in TNB, I was told that the board is the one pushing the company to do more around digital. Right. And so it's not surprising TNB is experimenting with the fiber rollout in Jasin, right, in Melaka. So actually in Malaysia, boards are aware, at least of the larger companies, and they're trying to push it down further. So because this is a broader scope across the region and 600 companies.
Yeah, but convincing the board is one thing, but there are other challenges as well.
Okay. Of course.
So staff augmentation to new skills is one thing.
Yep.
He says traditional IT staff are not equipped to handle the complexities of digital transformation.
Interesting.
And we need more engineers who are software capability driven. And that's the challenge they have, how to train this staff and how to make them meet the demands of the journeys they are on.
Well, that means there are jobs in software, man. Folks out there, jobs in software. Alert, alert.
It's always been.
Yeah, always actually been. Yeah, just reinforcing it now. If you listen to this, that's an important takeaway for me.
And one more thing that I found very interesting was, you know, as we move towards becoming more remote in our workplaces and all that, he says this is actually an issue as we move towards being more global and there's a more mobile workforce now. Yeah. It creates a lot of problems for CIOs because it is very difficult for them to manage teams and projects that are half a world away. Another issue that he highlighted was the increase in data volume. So they are struggling with basically processing the data. He said neck-breaking speed of information. With so much real-time data, the challenge lies in how to use this data fast enough to make real-time decisions.
All right.
Very interesting.
More stories after this with Digital News Asia, Chong Jin Seong, Kiranjin Ko and Karamjit Singh. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Before Friday materializes. BFM 89.9.
And we're still here with the folks from Digital News Asia, Zhang Jinxiong, Kiranjit Kaur and Karamjit Singh, talking about what's happening in the tech space. So this is Mereka's, another ECF story, right? Mm-hmm. They exceed their target, raises US$381,000 from 121 investors. What's the story about?
I think this was just to emphasize that one of the trends we already see in Malaysia now, it's a reality, is the fact that more and more, average people are there who maybe when they had some disposable income, they wanted to put it down like 50,000, put down a property. No, you know, they would now, they're looking to this, you know, entrepreneurs that they're betting on entrepreneurs they would not have heard of, who don't appear in the media spotlight, right? So, and this allows for democratization of investment. So I was really happy with the number. You know, you got 121 people. And I think what I love about Mereka, not because they're two countrymen running the show, but because they want to come and disrupt education, right? The act of learning. And through the maker movement, right? And it's the involvement of digital, it's technology, it's you know, carpentry, woodworking and all. So it's all economy and new economy skills coming together. And the fact that they've attracted, you know, 121 investors, I think is just incredible. It's inspiring. And just for you, all your listeners out there, not readers, listeners out there, you know, this is really a space you want to look at, right? Because the like Elaine Lokman said, the ECF platform operators have done a good job in making sure that when they bring you a particular entrepreneur and his idea to enter the market, or he's already an existing entrepreneur, just needs more money to scale.
Right.
This is something you can legitimately maybe bet on. It's still a risk, right? It's still a risk, but they've done the filter to say this is an acceptable risk.
Mm.
And I love it. And he said one couple came right towards the closing of the thing, actually came to their public maker center there. And after a chit-chat, casual chat and all, he said, "Wow, this auntie, uncle, okay lah, come and see me." And then after, when they left, they cut them a 150,000 ringgit check, man.
Right.
That's incredible, right?
That's the one they want to get, the baby boomers, I think. These are the ones, right?
Interesting, Mereka was during that period, right? Actually, the flat funding period.
And they write you a check.
No, but this great. And you know, Mereka is a mashup, right? It's a social enterprise and a commercial business. And you want to inspire more people like that. So these young men, when they started out, actually, there's Gurpreet, Rushvin. And I see there's two more individuals, but they're now in the background. And I apologize, I cannot remember their names. But there are actually four of them. And they're still involved, but in a smaller scale. And, you know, they wanted to, they came out of their comfort zones, right? So we cannot do enough to encourage crazy people like that to leave your comfort zone, to say, "I think things can be done, but they should be done better. I'm going to go and do it." It's still a 6-year journey before they reach the stage.
I've seen the boys grow from the BGBG.
BGBG, yes. It's still there, right? The company.
Still there, so just but how they've evolved.
All credit to them and to the move they represent, right? This is just coming and disrupt and wanting to make things better, right? Just brilliant. Hopefully more of you out there will be inspired by them, and not just them, there are others like them out there we've brought up on the show before. Okay. Just go out and you know, have guts and just suck it up and, you know, be the change that you want to see out there, right?
Be a game changer.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people who are now be willing to back you up, you know, with these ECF platforms.
Mm. We're moving to Penang. Yuzhong, what's happening in Penang?
All right, man.
So I took a trip out to Penang.
Yeah. Nasi kandar.
I didn't try the nasi kandar, but...
You were there to work. Okay.
For work, yes, evidently. To visit Sony's Penang factory, actually, Penang Tech factory. So, incidentally, the factories... I don't know whether this factory is the same age, but Sony already has a audio factory in Penang over 34 years already. This one, I can't really say it, but I saw a name plaque there that said it was opened in 91 by Toon M, actually.
Right.
But incidentally, anyway, this factory is... What's remarkable about it is that it feels like you were transported to Japan. Wow. But I've been to a printing factory before in Japan, on tour before, and stepping back into the Penang factory is like you're really in a Japanese factory all over again.
Did you do your morning exercise?
not really. They brought us in the afternoon after they fed us Penang food. But it's sparkling clean. I mean, the floor, everything is there. And you wouldn't figure that actually they do make some of the best headphones. You're wearing some headphones right now. Right. They're not Sony related, but they make the noise cancelling headphones, the WH-1000X Mark III, and also a waterproof earphone, called the WSF-900. This one you can actually take in the pool.
Right.
I kid you not.
I think my son might have the Sony one because he said noise cancelling, mom, when you're talking, I can't hear you.
Exactly. Now you know where it comes from. It comes from Penang.
Yeah, man.
So they're making it Penang. But I mean, I think what I take away from this trip is actually Karim has written a number of stories about IR 4.0, and then we are also observing how the changes are in how automation is taking over. I wouldn't say that this factory is fully automated yet. Yes, there are machines working side by side along humans and stuff like that. Still, the assembly plant, people are still doing it, but. The machines are still there, but there's still a human touch at the very
end.
There will actually at the very end of the assembly line, I was quite amazed. There's actually, once the headphones are done, there are at least three or four machines that automatically do all these testings.
Right.
But at the very end, there's this one lady who will twist, turn the headphones in really weird, contorted ways. But it's all to make sure that it's, you know, up to snuff and it's not going to break anything. Mm. And make sure that personally listens to it to make sure that, it's working. Wow. Bluetooth, everything is all there. Noise cancelling works. So, like, at the very end, there's still a human touch to it. Like, mm. But I don't know, like, coming on in when IR 4.0 really kicks off, whether how many of these workers will still be around that, right? doing this. I would say it's a 60-40 split, a 60 human and 40% human. Sorry, it's machines. 60 machine,
yeah.
Yeah,
60% machines, 40% human.
Or the I think it's the other way around at the moment. Yeah, but
so it may change, but you know, they do R&D. You know, what's significant is that they do research and development from this plant in Penang.
Yes.
And some of the global products, because this is one of the global operation centers, right? Mm. This plant, the idea comes from here, the brain power, you know, to invent something, the intellectual property. So Penang is, and I think that one thing we probably haven't done enough on the show over the last 6.5 years is emphasize how Penang is actually
You're
really
just biased.
An R, no, I'm not. Penang is actually an R&D hub, you know, yeah. It's a global R&D hub. So it doesn't, maybe the state even doesn't do a good enough job of selling that, but absolutely, you know, we should be proud of what's going on in Penang. Of course, it's not just Penangites working there as engineers, right?
Right.
There are lots of people. But, I mean, I know the Sony first undersold it, but, you know, what they're doing is great. You know, they're producing headphones and making
which
sound
so,
and
which
music
is so
for
typical,
the world.
Right? The not to shout about things. A Japanese company, right? Not
yeah,
to shout
they,
about
they
things.
They need to shout out more about it. That. But just quickly, I mean, like, they actually opened a store there, and one of the performances was actually done by the R&D team, incidentally.
Okay.
And they brought out their own products, which is a big speaker. This is the type that you put in your... They can actually act as your MC, one sound system kind of thing.
Right.
And they actually used it as a taiko drum, you know, the Japanese taiko drums. So all these R&D engineers, around 6 or 7 of them, they came out in an array and then they started beating on it. And this is that's a made in Penang product. Well, so, I mean, it was a good showcase of like, hey, these flashy strobe light powered... all-in-one systems, actually made in Malaysia, and these guys are proud to show for it.
So did we end up with karaoke?
They didn't end up with a karaoke, but I believe that machine can do it. I don't believe you can do it.
And voice enhancement, too, so you'll never sound croaky on karaoke anymore.
Okay. Kieran, you got this story on Dentsu Aegis, right? They and you haven't published this yet.
Yeah.
This is a Centennial Online Spending. What's that?
Yeah, so just as you're getting used to the term millennial, I mean, everybody's probably fed up of that term already.
Bring on the centennials. Okay.
Yeah, so Dentsu Aegis has come up with a report entitled Here Comes the Centennial, Southeast Asia's New Generation of Shoppers.
Ah.
So if you're a millennial, according to Dentsu, you're born between 1978 and 1995. Mm. And everyone that's born after 1995, you fall in the centennial category.
Okay.
Instead of Gen Z, huh? Interesting. Okay.
So basically, they studied this age group is between the ages of 16 to 23 years of age. And so they studied this particular age group for their spending patterns, which is interesting because it might seem a little bit premature. Like, they are very young and their earning capacity is not really
It's your daddy's money, eh?
Exactly, your daddy's money, and you're probably just starting off work. So where are you getting your money from?
Yeah.
But anyway, their findings show that a lot of them spend more than... More than 50% of them spend $30 a month on online shopping.
Mm.
And about 9% of this age group spends over $100 US dollars per month. And the largest spending is on mainly fashion, followed by electronics. Okay. And then there's other areas also like beauty and
too young for beauty
entertainment.
Products.
No, nope. You're 16-year-old. That's what you'd be spending on.
yeah,
16-year-old.
So we did ask them why they are looking into this age group. Mm. Like, it's so early to look into the age group, but they believe that how this age group spends is a prototype for how spending will be in the future.
True.
Really, I disagree with that. But you have different priorities as you get older, right? So when you want,
but
once
you
get
still
hit
shop
by
online.
That mortgage.
The social media.
That's what they're studying. What
anymore.
Do you buy online? Okay. And how do you do it? So he says this age group, they spend a lot of time doing research, actually.
Mm.
So he calls it web rooming and show rooming. When I say he, I'm referring to Arvind Sethu Madhavan. He is the Chief Strategy and Innovation Officer of Dentsu.
Web rooming?
Web rooming and show rooming. So web rooming is essentially you're going to a website and you're comparing products and reading reviews and that sort of thing.
Show rooming?
Showrooming, you go down to the physical store and you hold and touch and feel the product. And then they choose whether they want to buy it offline or online. So usually they compare prices and look for the best
deal. They end up buying online, but they want to just check and then say, and then go back and make their final call.
Your promo codes and discount codes.
Get the final call at home.
Yep. And then he also said that, so they invest heavily in research. Mm. So they really compare product reviews and read up on what people say about the product online. So he says, sometimes it might seem like the internet handle of the person is something completely unrecognizable, but these people actually believe what is written because they just think like, this person has tried out the product and they obviously have taken the time to write about it. Yeah. So
must be
it's believable. Wow. And then he also highlighted something about social media influences. Mm-hmm. So he says it's not enough for brands to just give these influencers product, pay them to appear with their products. Uh-huh. The centennials have this perception that, it's just brands paying them.
Yeah.
Right.
So the cynicism is there. Are they
good? The skepticism. Yeah. So he says it's more
effective. With every generation.
Yeah.
Okay. That's true. So it is true. More effective to actually have, instead of having 30 influencers mm-hmm. advertise your product, it's mm-hmm. better just select maybe five that actually love your product and believe in your product.
So being authentic is very important.
Right. Yeah, and
in choosing your influences.
Document the experience of using.
Okay. Yeah. Now we're running out of time. A final story that you have, Karim, this is the Golden Gate Ventures.
Yeah, so I like this story because it also talks about how venture capital funding from outside of Malaysia is now beginning to look, to have funds dedicated for Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And this is, of course, last week Golden Gate Ventures announced that they are actually launching a specific, US $18 million, which is 75 million ringgit, fund, looking to fund startups that are founded in Malaysia or are part of their portfolio, which are now planning to expand to other countries. So, which is great. So you must have a Malaysian presence, right? And this is 75 million dedicated. So for entrepreneurs out there, suddenly you got an extra 75 million. And on top of that, Frida, they're setting up their office here too. Mm. So this Golden Gate Ventures is, in the early days, people used to say it's a Silicon Valley fund. No, it's actually some guys from the US.
Jeffrey Payne?
Payne. Mm. You've got Paul Bagriel and Vinnie Lauria, right? Mm. These were the main three. And then you got Michael Lins, who came in later as a partner. Michael Lins is Dutch. But they came and they decided, first, the first three decided that, Southeast Asia is ripe for a disruption. We want to be part of that process and we want to help accelerate it by betting on early stage startups. So this is an early stage investor, Frida. And since they came into Singapore, and they decided to use Singapore as their base in 2011. So in the last 7 years, they made almost 30 investments in the region and some are doing very well. And now they've been coming in and out of Malaysia. They've worked very well with MDAG, with Cradle. They even had a co-investment partnership with Cradle in 2014, where they were going to invest on a matching basis. I mean, Cradle puts in 100,000, they would put in 100,000, right? Maximum of five startups a year. But that didn't work out because both sides couldn't agree on a startup, right? Maybe Golden Gates brought a startup to Cradle. They said, we don't think so.
Right.
So then that's fine, right? They can do it on their own. So unfortunate that didn't happen, but this didn't, dishearten them.
Or deter them, yeah.
Yeah, deter them. And they said that now we see that, he says, during engagement, we didn't feel the right amount of deal flow was coming from Malaysia, not the right kind of investments. But now they are. They said that they're seeing a lot more Malaysian companies breaking out from the region, from the country, wanting to go into the second, third countries, looking for funds to accelerate. And he says, this becomes really interesting for us. The change of government is one good thing, right? With the promise of rule of law. He says that wasn't a big factor, but it has helped lift foreign investor sentiment as to how they look at Malaysia. So it's an intangible. GGV is going to open up its office in January or February. They're still identifying the country head for Malaysia, doing some interviews as of last week when I spoke to him. And then they're going to be based in the Co in Bangsa. And because they've had a long relationship with the Co. So interesting, they're coming and they're going to be in a shared workspace, right? And when they need a bigger space, they may move somewhere else. But
they move to a bigger co-working
space. Yeah, bigger co-working space.
The choices are,
limitless. Limitless, or wherever. No, actually, talking about co-working space, just a quick point. When I spoke to Irman Akinci from Common Ground, he's one of the founders, he said they did some research and they found that the co-working spaces, they lose their appeal to people if the co-working space is more than 2 or 3 kilometers away from your home. So now with the way of working, people, even people in Puchong, whatever, they prefer to work in a shared workspace somewhere in Puchong because they all come up with the right concept, cool place, very fast broadband, you know.
Okay.
You've got a nice office environment. So very interesting how he said that. And that's why he said that we were not afraid of the centre that WeWork is over because it's going to be in town. We're not going to be competing with them. So now that WeWork is expanding.
But actually, they're going to open up in...
Bandar Utama, right?
No, Damansara Heights and Bangsar as well.
So they will. They're looking competition.
Okay, so what's the reading list?
There's just so many beautiful, beautiful stories,
because
right?
Because the story digressed.
No. But it's just so there's so many things moving on the right track. So reading list, there's a couple of long ones, which is, he already had Penang's R&D visit, fine. My TV Wars, a case of good money chasing after bad money. Mm. So if you're interested in what Syed Mukhtar is doing with his big empire, and you know, this is one subset of it, and maybe this is a bit of in trouble, it's been in the news, go and read that article, kind of interesting. I see somebody making a face. I won't say who it is. And then you've got, Singapore, in Indonesia, startups are being urged to work towards having global impact. Don't just look domestically. And then Supercharger FinTech Accelerator at the SC's event, right? They've signed 12 pilot, proof of concepts with 11 financial institutions, which is great. Financial institutions now are definitely very open to working with fintechs. And by the way, there was a dinner with a global bank the other day. And the CEO said that, look, on a global basis, his bank is investing $17 billion, next year in their technology digital budget. Mm. Just sit back and think of that. $17 billion on a global basis. That's a lot of money pumping into technology. He says, we are going to be ready for this wave that's coming, right? So all of you who think that fintech is going to come and take over all the banks again, and Dr. Sivapalan especially, go and drink some Milo, extra quad or whatever, right? Milo Kau Kau, and come down to earth, okay? Because the big banks are getting ready for all these startups, whether they end up making acquisition, I don't know, but it's happening. Fantastic space, right? Digital. And final point is, SC's event, their tagline was great. It's embracing technology. For everyone out there, embrace technology. Don't push it away because it's already here in our lives. It's going to be even more so for your children's future. Embrace it and ride with it higher, right?
You can't run away from it.
Sure.
It's in your face.
Absolutely, do not ignore it.
So with that, thanks, guys. Wish you all a blessed Christmas in advance and a great 2019. I've been speaking to Chong Jin Seong, Kiranjit Kaur and Karmjit Singh from Digital News Asia.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.